This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also download off our website over at progressive.org. I'm delighted to have here on the show again one of my favorite guests, Dr. Dan Murphy. He's the founder of the largest clinic in East Timor, the Bairro Pite Clinic. His clinic's been seeing 300 patients or more a day now for almost 20 years. And to my mind, this is one of the greatest examples of real public health work at the grassroots anywhere in the world. Dr. Dan, welcome back to Progressive Radio.
Thank you, Matt.
Obviously, you're not in East Timor. You're here in Madison, Wisconsin, where we taped this program. Why are you in the United States right now?
I came back because my alma mater, the University of Iowa School of Medicine, is recognizing me as a distinguished alumnus. And this is really quite an award, considering that I haven't discovered any new cure for cancer or I'm not prominent in any field. But what I have done is a large amount of work at the grassroots level.
And did they recognize really who you, did they know who you were and all your political backgrounds? Did they know what they were getting when they gave you this award?
Well, they mentioned some of the things, but I don't think they really understand how I try to apply my trade always in a politically charged situation. I'm always looking for a cause. I always want to try to have an impact larger than just one-on-one with a patient. And I would say I'm trying to cut myself in the mold of people like Jose Rizal, the doctor that was executed by the Spanish for trying to lead the independence movement in the Philippines, or Norman Bethune, who marched with Chairman Mao on the Thousand Mile March, Charlie Clemens working behind the lines in El Salvador during horrible times, Che Guevara, of course. These kind of people always did the same thing and had a lot of political motivation. I always try to do that, and I consider it a great privilege that I've been able to participate in East Timor's struggle for self-determination.
And it's not the first struggle you participated in. You worked with Cesar Chavez. You worked in Mozambique. So I'm thinking University of Iowa, you get this award. Did you lay some of this on them?
I think to put it into a thimble, my message was, unless we come up with a better way of dealing with the ever-growing disparity between rich and poor, we will not be allowed to rest in peace in this country and around the world. That's probably one of the major determinants for causes of ill health and suffering around the world, and it seems like it's getting worse instead of better.
Well, I agree with you. It's getting worse, but I want to just probe here a little bit on this, whether we can rest in peace, not while we're dead, but while we're alive here in the United States, because especially those people who are comfortable or middle or upper class, the middle class is shrinking now, but the upper class, the top 10%, especially the top 1%, boy, they rest real comfortable.
Except the way communication is these days, the poor have a good idea of how the rich are living, and they want their share, and rightfully so, and they want self-determination. And I think even in places like China, this is going to be one of their big issues to deal with. What about the opinion of the everyday person in China? How are they going to handle that?
And we're seeing strikes there now.
Yeah. I think it's going to be one of the major determinants of how they come out. And we in East Timor have to deal with countries like China, and they would like to be world leaders. We see their presence growing all the time, and it's not just in East Timor. It's in many places around the world. So these are very important factors to take into consideration.
And Indonesia is the largest Muslim country in the world, the next-door neighbor and longtime oppressor of East Timor. But in East Timor, in Indonesia, the discrepancies in income as they are everywhere in the world, and probably most glaring in the third world, where you have a tiny elite that's doing quite well and you have the vast majority of people who aren't doing well at all.
It's true. I would say, though, in Indonesia and in East Timor, at least there's a semblance of political stability. There are still a lot of problems around the edges, but for instance, in East Timor, I feel comfortable walking anywhere in the country any time now. And I think most people would agree it's probably safer than most of the major cities around the world. So that's good. Politically, there is a system in place, and I think they will be able to have a transition in government secondary following elections. That probably will happen.
When are those elections scheduled?
2 years.
And Jose Ramos Horta is doing a good job?
Well, it's questionable. Some things are good, some things aren't so good. Political stability is good, and he does a great job at trying to relate around the world. But you're fighting a tough battle when you're up against, first of all, multinational corporations, especially oil companies. For instance, ConocoPhillips, and Woodside is the big one from Australia. And then many governments around the world are trying to position themselves and use East Timor as a pawn to get themselves into a little better area for them. And it's hard when you have to battle against these kind of forces.
You, Dr. Dan Murphy is my guest. You got an award also from Jose Ramos Horta last year. What was that award?
Well, I think that was for service to the country. And I really liked what was written on the plaque. And it said something like, the Bayrupite Clinic at times was the only service functioning in East Timor during the very difficult period of transition between Indonesia, from Indonesian times to independence. And we're open every day, all the time. And we've at one point, we had over 1,000 refugees in our clinic. So it hasn't always been easy. But I think if you work hard and try to protect all the angles, you can keep functioning and deliver a service. And I think that's what he was recognizing.
And how's this clinic going right now?
I think more sick people than ever. And partly it's because we have a growing reputation of doing decent work. There is a National Health Service, but it's not spread to all the villages. And it has two problems. If I could quote the former Ministry of Health, quality is not so good and attitude is not so good.
What about attitude? I don't understand that.
Attitude is, it's not user friendly. And many times it's blame the victim, blame the person. Why did you wait so long? You should have done this, you should have done that. Well, at our clinic, we go out of our way to welcome everyone and to try to help in some way. Even though we can't solve all the problems, we can at least empathize and try to be user friendly.
So the attitude of some providers is condescending or just not helpful?
Could be condescending. A lot of the providers are from a higher social class in East Timor, and people come in from a village. They're illiterate. Maybe they don't even speak the national language, and it's very hard for them to advocate for themselves. And instead of being welcome, many times they're made to feel like, oh, why are you bothering us? Why did you come?
And you don't do that where you are.
Oh, we go out of our way to be the opposite.
And you have you've trained many Timorese providers, and you also go out in the countryside. You don't just wait for them to come to you, or still mostly people come to you?
People come to us, but we have two teams now that every day go out to villages, and we now go to 7 districts. So we're in areas where no one else is. I just finished training 2 women from a little village called Rotutu. And to get to that, you have to go to the middle of the country, the middle of the island, go to the end of the road, then walk over 2 more mountains, and then you come to this village of over 1,000 people. But yet, don't these people have the same right to health care as anyone else? Yes, they do.
So this was a question of access, and not access as we understand in the United States, which is having the financial resources to buy health care, which is ludicrous, but just physical access.
Yeah, people are so isolated, and we don't have the infrastructure. The United Nations hasn't provided infrastructure, and East Timor's trying to do that, but to get things done effectively is not so easy in East Timor.
And East Timor's situation, this lack of physical access to health care, is not unlike problems in other third world countries. My wife's been in Tanzania and out into the rural areas there and providing some care, and hopes to do more of that. Tell me about how hard it is to practice medicine when you understand that a lot of the patients you're seeing are suffering and some may die from really preventable diseases.
Well, I can tell you on the top end, One of the reasons I'm here in the U.S. now is because I have so many people with heart disease. And it could be congenital hearts. These are kids with some kind of a intrinsic defect in their heart. Or we have a very high incidence of rheumatic heart disease, which will ruin the valves of the heart. So these people need open heart surgery. It cannot be done in East Timor. Around the world, there are many places that could do it. Australia has many hospitals that could do it. But then it becomes a political issue. Is this kind of care going to be available for a Timorese person? Recently, I had one woman, 23 years old, and it was kind of a mistake. She was sent to Sydney because they thought it was a simple valve case where they could just put a balloon in and pop it open and she could come back and everything would be fine. However, on further study there, they found that three of her valves were so bad that they were irreparable. Well, what they did was they took out her heart, used the pericardium to make new valves, and put in three new valves in this woman. No one from East Timor has ever had surgery like that.
So this is a different concept of preventable disease. This is preventable disease at the very high-tech end of the healthcare provision. But it's still someone who, if they had access to the finest healthcare facilities and systems, would be alive.
Yeah, I think maybe 75% of what we see in our clinic is preventable. But the answers on how to prevent is not so simple. We're talking socioeconomic conditions, and we're talking about poverty and, I would say, underdevelopment. Clean water, vaccinations, housing, education, all go hand in hand to try to build up a system that will avoid having all these tuberculosis cases, malaria cases, dengue, typhoid. Mostly these are diseases of poverty. These are diseases of density of population.
And these are primarily the diseases you see at your clinic, right?
Every day.
And that must be kind of hard to see those and know that there's a systemic problem there. I'm reminded of Ralph Nader, who used to be an insurance lawyer. People would come to him and say, you know, I got in a car accident. So rather than dealing with each case at a time, he went national and tried to change the political system and the laws. But you're seeing people there who are coming in with diseases that really you can't solve yourself. I mean, you can help solve, but you can't solve the general, you know, one person after another is going to keep coming.
Right. So what we have to do is come up with an answer that might prevent all of this. And, of course, those of us who have always followed David Warner, Where There Is No Doctor, and the Paulo Freire, the Brazilian educator and empowerment and pedagogy of the oppressed. The answer to most of this is empowering local people to advocate for themselves. And that means that I had a WHO official who came in and said, well, Dr. Dan, are you trying to tell me that a villager is going to tell us how to build an automobile? And I said, no, but the villager will be able to tell us what his concerns are or her concerns are. And that's where we have to start. We cannot start in Geneva with WHO. We have to start in the village.
And maybe you can't start in New York with the UN Millennial Goals either. I mean, those were nice goals. If they happened, it would be great that, you know, they'd reduce poverty, you'd reduce infant mortality and maternal mortality. But this local empowerment is a threat, though. It's a threat to those who run governments.
Well, of course, it's a threat, and as free press is also a threat. And we have a group in East Timor. It's called Lau Hamutuk, Charlie Shiner and his group, and they speak on issues that are controversial, and they do an in-depth analysis. And many times, the government appears to be under criticism from this. But Ramos Horta will say, I'm not comfortable when you do this, but I know that it's necessary.
Well, that's enlightened. That doesn't happen in every country. Empowerment of women is a big issue for you, I know. How is that going in East Timor?
Well, our maternity, last month we had 107 deliveries, which for 1 month is quite a number. That is where health begins, with the women in maternity and with the newborn baby. And we go out of our way to try to make that a good experience for women. we have a little questionnaire when they finish and they're ready to go home. And it's, what was good in your stay? What was bad in your stay? And would you be interested in participating in women's health issues? And
how many answer that one?
Most women would like to participate. So what we do is form little groups in different sections of the country. And then, they have regular meetings to define what are women's issues. How can BioRepute Clinic be of service to the women's agenda, and how can women participate?
When they answer, what are their issues, what do they say?
Some of it's shocking. You know, they could say poverty, lack of communication, lack of transportation. One of the things that we worry about is, why is it that 50% of women, even in Delhi, in the capital city, don't make it to the hospital for a delivery? And we thought we would get the kind of answers I talked to before. Surprisingly, second on the list was, well, we don't have enough money for any clothes for the newborn, and we're too ashamed to come. Mm. So you wouldn't think of it like that, but that's something that we should be able to address.
And how would you address that?
These are things that other countries can help with. It's not a major expense. And you
could have free, have people donate clothes, certainly.
We can have that. But mostly it's a matter of identifying during the prenatal course, is that the concern? Then it can be addressed in a preemptive way. And hopefully that you eliminate that. And then there are the problems of transportation. We can do that. We have an ambulance. You just have to let us know. We can go and get you. And our ambulance is very active going out to get pregnant women. I can tell you about a case we had 2 months ago. A woman was having a baby, and this is out in a village where we had a trained midwife from that village, lay midwife. She had trained for 3 months in our clinic. The baby was coming out feet first. So she called. Cell phones are now quite widespread in East Timor. Most people don't have any minutes left, but at least they can miss call or give you a little signal and you can get a hold of them. So our ambulance went out. For 2 hours, it couldn't cross the river that was leading up to where the village was. And finally, our ambulance got through. They couldn't deliver the baby, and they had to bring the baby all the way back. At least in our clinic, we were able to deliver the baby. The baby did not survive, but the mother survived. Otherwise, these are going to be maternal mortalities. Mm. We lead Southeast Asia in maternal mortality.
And that's a lot of time just a question of access, physical
access. Of course it is. Mm. If the deliveries were all in a controlled situation, we could eliminate most of those cases. Mm.
And how helpful is the government of East Timor in funding clinics?
Well, I think they're trying. And health is one of the parts of the government that works better than the others, still very deficient. And we try to cooperate whenever possible with what the government does in the Ministry of Health. But we also go beyond that and address the needs as we see them, as people come into our clinic.
What about U.S. aid, Dr. Dan Murphy? Does the United States government through the State Department or AID give money that gets to people in East Timor? Or in your experience in other countries around the world, how do you think USAID is doing on these crucial questions?
AID has some programs. Health was not on their agenda until just recently. So now we're starting to see a few more health-related programs. But look at what the country of Cuba is doing. Here we have 500 students from East Timor in Cuba in medical school. They've started a little Cuban medical school right in the capital of East Timor in Dili, and more students, maybe another 100 a year, are going into medical school in East Timor. The quality, I would say, is not what it should be. And I'm not sure that that's the best way to address village-level health care in East Timor. And it does that kind of thing, I know they do it in Cuba too, but it doesn't involve advocacy by people at the grassroots level. It's more of a top-down approach, and it's very doctor heavy. I'm not sure if that will be able to solve the problems in East Timor, but think of the commitment that Cuba makes to international health.
What do you tell U.S. citizens who say, we give too much for foreign aid anyway, or why should we be giving health care aid to people in East Timor?
You could just take a look out at the ocean, and you can see the oil rigs out there, and people like ConocoPhillips are making a fortune off of the resources of East Timor. And not only that, but politically, East Timor is very important in Southeast Asia. And not just the United States would like to have influence with East Timor and their politics, but Australia is extremely concerned. Indonesia is very concerned. And China preoccupies themselves with what goes on in East Timor. Japan also. We get a lot of aid from Japan. Japan occupied East Timor during World War II. So a lot of different people are vying for influence in a country like East Timor.
And how do you tell people to wrestle with moral dilemmas? I mean, if you assume that every person on earth has an equal right to a decent standard of living, you know, there are a lot of obligations that puts on people. I heard you talk to a group of medical students in Wisconsin last year, and essentially you told people who were willing to do it just to drop everything, forget about your medical loans, and go out and help as many people as you possibly can, and you can help more people in the third world than here.
Yeah, I do try to tell people that, and at one point I told a group, find your Burma, and then do all you can to make it turn the right direction. And I consider myself extremely fortunate that I was able to come into East Timor, even when it was still under Indonesian occupation, participate in changing that whole situation, and now try to help East Timor develop a good healthcare system. And I see a lot of international interest on the part of medical students and others in the United States. There are a lot of people that have the right motivation, and they want to go out and do things. They're not sure exactly how to have an impact, how to make things happen. Government, that's a whole nother keg of worms. I'm not sure. The Obama administration would like to do all things for all people, but I think they're facing the reality and finding that it's not as easy as it looks.
I'm speaking with Dr. Dan Murphy. He's the founder of the Biro Pite Clinic in East Timor. He's got an award from Jose Ramos Horta, the head of East Timor, and also from his alum, University of Iowa, for all the work he's been doing in these past 20 years now over there. What's next for you? Are you just gonna finish your days practicing in East Timor?
I've got plenty of challenges, and the thing about a country like East Timor is it's extremely dynamic. And every day you are engaged in multiple challenges, having to make difficult decisions, seeing problems that are crying out to be addressed, and on many different levels. And the hard thing is to decide, where do you put your energy? For me, I keep working every day, and I would like to expand my influence. I would like to try to pursue the Peter principle and get up to the point where I no longer can be effective. But so far, I think I'm still able to accomplish a lot, and I would like to try to go and do more and more if I can.
Dr. Dan Murphy, if for people who are listening, if they wanted to help you in your work, what can they do?
We actually have just opened up. I did my first ever podcast last week, and we're going high tech now. So we have opened up a new site in Facebook, of all places. And we're going to try to develop that site and use it as a way of channeling information out on what kind of work we're doing, what our needs are, how people can help. If anyone wants to donate, if they want to come and participate and volunteer, that'll be a good place to look. And most people are on Facebook and have computers, and so we can use that to get our message out.
And people can just type in Dan Murphy on Google and East Timor, and that's probably the best way to find you. But then I'm wondering about people who, you know, we see the crisis that happened in Haiti during the earthquake, or we hear you talking about the challenges in East Timor. And most people listening, I mean, if you're in your kitchen listening to this or in your car or at work, I mean, you're not going to up and go to East Timor or go to Haiti. What can that person do?
Of course, financial contributions are accepted, and our budget now is over $15,000 a month. I remember when I first was interviewed here, I think it was $2,000 a month.
Still, so that's $180,000 a year. That's nothing.
It's not much.
Right.
Should we get more resources, we'll do more. I would love to have a different kind of a medical school. I would love to have a medical school where villagers pick their health representative, someone they trust, someone that they could work with. We take that person and train them according to what we see as diseases and problems in East Timor, and constantly rotate them back through the village. and make it an ongoing program that addresses needs as they are seen.
How long would it take you to train someone not in the system here in the United States to become a official doctor, but go out and actually help people live, survive diseases that they don't need to die from?
Well, I think we could train people to at least start within a year, 2 years, and then it depends on how we would structure the ongoing continuing education. But I think in medicine, it has to be a lifelong process.
See, but that's a much less hierarchical approach to the provision of medicine. If you're empowering people after a year, local people, to go help cure their neighbors.
Well, if I just address the five most common problems and use basic methods of trying to do something to help, it's not rocket science. And yeah, you'd like people to learn about high tech and high tech imaging and digital this and that, but that doesn't relate to their lives in a village in East Timor. When it does, okay, then we have to go there. For now, it's basic things like soap and water, washing your hands, giving the right nutrition to a child. These are the things that are going to make a huge difference in healthcare.
And breastfeeding, is that common or is that frowned on in
East Timor? Breastfeeding is common, and we are the strongest advocates for breastfeeding in all cases, and exclusive breastfeeding. I tell every newborn, the mother of the newborn, I tell them all, whatever you do, keep breastfeeding. And if you have any problem with it, come to us and we will help you, because that is key for your child.
And how long do you want them to breastfeed?
I would like to see people breastfeed at least 1 year, and if they can stretch it out to the next year, that's better yet.
Mm-hmm. And so the powdered milk companies haven't infiltrated East Timor yet?
No, and no one has money to buy that kind of thing. Some of the elite will go and give some Indonesian milk, but the vast majority of people still breastfeed.
Mm-hmm. And do you have people on your staff who you treated first as patients?
Yeah, we have plenty. We treat everyone in the country. In fact, a lot of the UN people who have access to their own system, they still come to us. We had a patient from Bangladesh. No, he was from Pakistan 2 weeks ago. And he had been to three or four different providers, including the UN, and he wasn't getting better. And they said it was malaria, and they didn't know. Well, we've been doing this so often and for so long a time that we thought that he fits perfectly the category of typhoid. And we gave him treatment. He got better, and he was extremely grateful.
You're like the doctor in that book by the New Yorker writer who said you can make a decision. If you've worked 10,000 hours at something, you can make a snap decision and be right almost all the time. You must just trust your instincts after a while now, don't you?
Well, you know, when I was talking to people down at the University of Iowa, and I said, you know, a doctor here in the United States, they might see 30 people in a day. And of those, maybe most of them have some minor problem. Maybe one will be very sick. For me, I'm seeing 300 in a day, and a large number of those are extremely ill. But after you've done it and evaluated and tried to work your way through it over and over and over, it does become kind of automatic. And the rumor is out in the villages in East Timor, go to the Bioptic Clinic. As soon as you walk in the room, they know what's wrong.
Well, I would encourage everyone who's been listening to help the BioPite Clinic and to help Dan Murphy in the incredible public health work he's doing in East Timor. Dan, it's great to see you again.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.